Blog Talk Radio.
Turn me up on my headphones. Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Baba, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show and keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war ain't gonna wait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five silly guys, diversified and educated.
Diversified and educated. It's Thursday, November 17, 2011, and it's time to enter that room. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm at the round table with my brothers in arms, Akil Bayon, Jimmy Williams, Paul Johnson, and B. Austin. We got a great show for you tonight. We're going to talk about the two big fights from last Saturday, boxing and UFC, the NBA lockout, Coach K, and the injury bug sweeping the NFL. And later in the first hour, we'll be joined by MMA fighter Kyle Sefcik to talk about his upcoming bout this Saturday in D.C. with Mario Martinez. So settle in, get comfortable, and listen up. Make sure you join the conversation tonight. So jump into that JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/The War Room or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call us on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Like we always do, we want to give a shout-out to our Philly radio brethren. Check out Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern right here on Blog Talk Radio. They got some big guests coming up, so don't miss their talk with new Sixers CEO Adam Aaron, and they're working on locking up Sixers play-by-play announcer Mark Zumoff. We also want to say what's up to Jeff and P. Coop and Juana of Ranked Top 5 Sports Talk Radio out in Chicago. You can catch them every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings, also here on Blog Talk Radio. We sent them their winnings from the Bears-Eagles Monday Night Football bet. So, they just confirmed to us a little while ago that they received it. We posted those pictures up on Facebook, Twitter, and on our blog. But right now, let's see who's having the birthday.
It's my birthday. Yay!
All right, fellas, y'all ready for these birthdays?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, our first birthday today is one Mr. Elvin Ernest Hayes. Elvin Hayes turned 66 today.
My birthday! Yay!
Bayon, Elvin Hayes, what do you think of?
Well, all I know about Elvin Hayes is what he did in the past before I started watching basketball. But I remember his nickname being the Big E and him just putting up points and getting boards. And leading teams to championships and just like dominating. He was a horse, as they can say.
Yeah. Jimmy, Elvin Hayes.
Same here. He played before my time, but you know, we all study the history of the sport. And he played back in the day when cats was like grabbing 30 boards a game. Like Elvin Hayes was a beast on the boards and he was like 6'8", 6'9" playing center.
That's a good point that you made. How come back in the day dudes average so many rebounds? Like, what's the difference between basketball back then and basketball now?
It was more missed shots.
Well, the pace of the game was higher, so there were more shots and more opportunities to rebound.
Why though? I mean, they got the same shot clock, and some times before then they didn't have a shot clock. So how Wilt getting like 30 boards and dudes taking like 30 minutes to take a shot?
First off, we're not sure Wilt existed, so we're not going to look at that because Wilt's stats are so crazy, we don't even know if he existed.
All right, Austin, you got anything on Elvin real quick for me?
Yeah. Elvin, 12-time NBA All-Star, 3-time NBA First Team. You know how I do, NBA All-Rookie Team, All-Defensive Player once. 27,000 points, 16,000 rebounds, roughly 1,100 blocks. And he finished out his career in 84 with the Rockets, and even in his last season, he averaged 21 points and 12.5 rebounds. So he did it from start to finish. Shout out to you, Big Elvin. So that's all I got. I'm not familiar with his body of work left.
So the next birthday is one Mr. Reginald Wayne turns 33 today. Reggie Wayne on his can't get a win Indianapolis Colts. Austin, what you got on Reggie Wayne?
Reggie Wayne learned everything he could learn from the great Marvin Harrison, native son of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Shout out to Roman Catholic. You know what? Reggie's very talented. I mean, 5-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro. He's actually over 10,000 yards receiving now. He's got 822 receptions with 11,000 yards.
You're only going to get about 500 more this year.
But Reggie's nice, man. He's done some nutty things in training camp, like drive a dump truck into training camp. So he may be a noodle off the field, but he's nice, man. Shout out to Reggie.
Jimmy.
Happy birthday.
Jim, Reggie Wayne.
Reggie Wayne is another one of the first-round draft picks that Peyton Manning had the opportunity to play with. He's a great receiver. I wouldn't say he's an all-time great, but you know. But the thing is, now without Peyton Manning, listen.
I say, why are you always taking shots at Peyton?
Another first round draft pick, Peyton Manning had the opportunity to
play with.
Another
first round draft pick that had the opportunity to play with Peyton Manning. Now that he doesn't, he looked like a 12th round draft pick.
Look, man, I wasn't seeing you made it about Peyton Manning. Man, I was just talking about Peyton Manning.
I just took the shot. That's my play cover, man.
Slick.
We're taking shots.
God, he talks slick.
Bayon, Reggie Wayne.
Wide receiver out of the U, a beast. Y'all pretty much said everything else. A beast of wide receiver, but this year. He is doing Tony Nathan.
All right, so the next birthday, man, this is a name right here. Mr. Asatadima Umenyora, better known as Osi Umenyora, turns 30 today.
My birthday, yay!
Bam, Asatadima.
Yo, defensive lineman for the Giants. You know, he helped lead them to a Super Bowl. Because that line, I mean, they were able to get pressure with four people, when they beat the Patriots. And they showed that if you could pressure Brady in that high-powered, record-setting offense that went 18-0, you can apparently make them 18-1 and win. So,
And did it again last week. This week they're going to batter around Mike Vick with his crack ribs. Jimmy, Osi Umenyora.
Osi Umenyora is the greatest British-born defensive lineman in football.
History.
You know, in the history of football, the greatest British-born defensive lineman in the history of football. I mean, it ain't hard to beat, but still.
Austin, O.C.
Yo, I was going to say that O.C. was overrated, but based on his relationship with Victoria's Secret model, Salida Ebanks, he's highly rated. He's a good dude. 300 tackles, 58 sacks, but only 2 Pro Bowls in 10 seasons. Very talented, very, very talented. A little soft. You can run at him and smash him in the mouth, and he speaks proper English. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm not saying that makes him soft.
That's the thing these days with some of the best pass rushers, because they're getting a little lighter. So, you know, sometimes it's a little easy to run at them dudes. But, so our last birthday of the day is one Mr. Amari Sarzarez. I want to start my own league, Stoudemire. He turns 29 today, Amari Stoudemire.
It's my birthday, yay!
We'll go to Jimmy.
Yo, I'll be very brief. A lot of people don't know this, but Amari was born with a rare disorder that makes him allergic to playing defense.
Defense-itis. Kill Amari Cesaris Stoudemire.
Well, first of all, his gear is weak. They were in the NBA lockouts. You know how they always show you that clip of the players and owners and Billy Hunter getting out of cars, walking into some hotel?
Yeah.
One time Amari got out with, like, some burgundy jeans that were tight with, like, stuff in his pocket sticking out, like a phone or a tablet or something. Then he had on, like, this cardigan that was, like, kind of schmedium. And I'm like, yo, like, what are you doing? Like, it was so bad. Like, I had to rewind it on DVR, and I was and I took a picture of it. And but then my camera had messed up, so then I lost the picture. But that's how bad it was. Like, it woke me up, and I had to, like, take a picture of it.
DVR
and,
to walk.
Yeah, 2 years weak. So, there you go.
Austin, what you got on Amari?
Yo,
standing tall and talented.
I'm an Amari fan in terms of his offensive game. I mean, NBA Rookie of the Year in 03, six-time All-Star. He puts up major numbers. But I'm going to take this time to say that we here at the War Room are not in support of big black men wearing Justin Bieber's clothing. Yo, y'all need to get out of his closet. Y'all need to get out of his closet, man. Him and LeBron and your man Superman down there in Orlando, they stay wearing clothing that would fit a 12-year-old. It's not cool, man. We don't support the tight clothes movement.
No tight clothes. Occupy regular clothes. So that's the birthday. They were brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon in Oxon Hill, Maryland. Call there, ask for Lisa. The link is on our website, warroomsports.com. Now Jimmy's going to tell everybody what happened while y'all were on the grind.
Absolutely. And by the way, while you were on the grind, is brought to you by phillyautodesign.com. You can visit their website at phillyautodesign.com or also on our website. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the Miami Marlins. Not the Florida Marlins, they're not called the Miami Marlins. They're making a strong push to sign Albert Pujols.
Are they?
Offering him something like 9 years, $225 million.
Yes, sir.
Do you think it's possible that he would actually go there? Considering he got about $210 million offered from St. Louis, where he currently plays. $15 million going to make a difference?
Well, here's the story, because actually, St. Louis hasn't made the offer yet, but people were saying that's what they were prepared to offer, but Miami jumped out there first. Now, his reps have always been saying throughout this whole process that, you know, if anything's close or if it's like a tie, if it's a match offer, St. Louis would beat any team. But they said also St. Louis, like Jimmy Rollins said in Philly, St. Louis won't get a hometown discount. $15 million is a lot of a discount. So,
yeah, but here, you know, here's what I'm thinking, though.
He got two rings already.
Though.
He might just be trying to break the bank now.
What I'm thinking is this, though. I wonder how this is getting out there. I was reading something online last night. It was saying that now the Cubs are going to come back. The Cubs are talking about 230, and they're saying that these are rumors. So I think that his people are putting these rumors out there. He's making
That's possible, too. It could be like negotiating ploys, but at the same time, if somebody does jump out there with the right contract and St. Louis can't match, I think he's going to take a nice hard look at it because, like I said, he got his two rings already. He got all the accolades one man can have in baseball. It's time to break the bank. These contracts are guaranteed. So,
answer me this question. How do you go home to your wife at night and say, babe, they offered me $225 million, but I was like, no, I'm cool.
Yeah.
If you're good enough to be able to do that, your wife's going to treat you real nice that night. So,
what can you not buy at 210 that you, I don't know, man. My problem with baseball.
There's one more generation worth of family taken care of. Also.
Some of these stiffs that are making, like, take a Jason Worth, for example. Like, Pujols is like four times the player that Worth is, so. Does that mean should he get $600 million? I mean, A-Rod, you know, we all know that I may overweight clutch play, and so A-Rod does stack up numbers, and he's a great player, but when the fourth quarter comes around, he disappears like, well, you know. shout out to my homie down in Miami. Pujols is clutch. Pay that, take that $225, man. Get your money.
Yeah.
Doc Bay, you got anything you want to say about that?
Yo, I'll just be glad when this is over. Before the season, that they were talking about him turning down nine-figure deals, and now they're talking about, okay, he may get some nine-figure deals and go somewhere else. I'll just kind of be glad when it's over. But I do agree with Brad. A-Rod made like 28 or 29 million this year. Because of his lack of clutchness, maybe they should only give him $20 million. He should give $9 million back to the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to some more baseball talk, believe it or not. Let's talk about the Cy Youngs.
Boom.
Clayton Kershaw and Justin Verlander. And what do you guys think about those before I get to the others?
Those they were my picks. It was really – you know, not much with the years that they had. Verlander, he was unanimous. He won unanimously, and he's still up to possibly win the MVP. So that was a given. Kershaw probably had a little more competition in his league than Verlander had in his, but he was like, because you know the Dodgers stunk this year.
Yeah.
When he pitched, they didn't stink. So, boom, there you go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Anybody else got any opinions on these two? Okay, cool. Let's talk about the managers of the year. Kirk Gibson. Kirk Gibson and Joe Maddon. It's funny. Every time I see Kirk Gibson's name, I think about that, you know, the World Series when he hits the home run and he comes across. Yeah, but anyway, now he's, you know, manager of the year. Any thoughts on this?
Probably another two that deserved it. Like, Gibson, you made the Diamondbacks a better team this year, and then you go over to the AL with Joe Maddon. Who thought that, you know, Tampa would get out of that division and make the playoffs this year with the Yankees and the Red Sox, you know, getting all the attention?
Shout out to our homie in Tampa, Willie Garland, but they still frauds down there. And by the way, in our chat room, Ranked Top 5 is talking about Cubs all day, so we didn't send him any alcohol. We didn't send him any alcohol, so that's his fault. But one thing I got to say about this gentleman is, why does baseball wait so damn long to announce these awards?
Yeah, well, people done forgot about the baseball season already.
Exactly, though. The next season about to start. They're talking about last season's awards. Like, come on, cuz. What is that?
You know, the MVP doesn't even get announced until Monday.
Come on,
they're just trying to get attention for as long as they can.
It's about to be
the damn thing already.
Winter meeting is about to start in a few weeks.
Yo, that's ridiculous. Anyway, moving on to some other news.
Spring
Joe
training
Pye.
About to start.
Joe Pye had a crib, you know, worth about a half an M, $500K, and he sold it to his wife for $1. Now, you know, I've seen a lot of dollar transactions just to switch it, you know, getting your estate in order. But now people are saying these are rumors. No one knows whether this is true or not, that he was preparing for a lawsuit by moving assets out of his name. Think there's any truth to this?
Of course. He sold it for a dollar? What?
$1. Yo, but... No, but seriously, though, like, I mean, this happens a lot. I mean, you got to remember, Joe Pye is 682 years old, so, you know.
I have a question, though. Because he sold it to his wife. Does that make a difference? Because when people look at assets, you know, basically it's like what your husband or wife own, you own.
If this conspiracy theory
was true, I thought maybe he would have to sell it to somebody else.
No, not all the time, though, Dev. They couldn't attach it. Like, it's in Pennsylvania, so they couldn't have attached it. You know, if it's just in her name and his name is not on there.
We'll consult. We got to consult with our legal expert, Blueprint Williams. But I think that, as you just stated, in PA, he made a power move there. They can't come after her for something that he's done.
And to be real, all these
people that are out here, you know, talking that Joe Pye must go and must die and all this craziness, yo, that's always like you did everything you could every time you saw something bad going on. But never mind. Anyway.
How many coke dealers you walk by on the street when you was coming up?
here's my thing though, right? What's crazy about it is, I've seen this happen a lot of times in real estate, but usually it's to the kids or something, because you're getting your affairs in order. And like I said, Joe Pye is 300 years old, but his wife is like 400 years old. So that's what makes it to me look fishy. Like, he didn't sign it over to his kid; he gave it to her. She might be older than him.
I don't know. The only recourse that people are really going to have, I mean, technically they could bring criminal charges, but it'll never stick. But the civil side of things,
Joe Paterno is not, I'm not even worried about that. Joe Paterno is not even going, not even to be smart, but he's not going to live through all of this. Seriously.
You never know, Dev.
Think about it. If he does end up going to trial or something, they're going to put him in jail. He's just going check out, man. Come on.
Yo, here's my thing, right?
My thing is this.
I don't think it's that fishy. Now, if he'd have signed his crib over to McCreary for like a dollar, then we'd have like something to talk about. But as of right now, I think it's a non-issue.
Yeah.
But let's talk about
his wife could be much younger than him. You know, everybody in his life used to play for him. She might have been a cheerleader back in the day while he was coaching. So it's like everybody, even the people, his higher-ups, they all played for him or did something under him. Like, she probably was a water girl or something.
Yo, last story I want to talk about related to this story is Franco Harris, NFL Hall of Famer.
Man.
He lost his job for sticking up for Joe Pye. I know Dev's got a problem with this. When I saw the story, I said Dev's got a problem with this.
Franco got shit tattooed on. Yeah, I mean, you know me. I'm all about people speaking their mind. And I got some quotes from the dude. He just said, "I feel that the board made a bad decision in letting Joe Paterno go. I'm very disappointed in their decision. I thought they showed no courage, not to back someone who really needed it at the time. They were saying the football program under Joe was at fault." And then, you know, he went on to say some other things, but his job, who was he working for at the time, Jimmy?
The
Meadows Racetrack and Casino.
Yeah.
After all of that, they issued a statement. Said, "In light of recent developments with Franco Harris regarding Joe Paterno's dismissal, Franco and the Meadows have mutually decided to put their business relationship on hold at this time while these matters are looked into further." Mutually? Come on, man.
FOH,
you know what that means. That means
casino,
we can do for speaking his mind. We,
yo,
we mending
casino,
Humpty.
Like, What kind of moral standing do you have? You take advantage of people for one. Like, come on, cause I mean,
the house
now,
always wins.
Yo, I think that now Franco should just like focus on trying to bring back, welcome back Cotter, and
So y'all telling me, you know, Franco, who's known for the immaculate reception, he just came up with the immaculate deflection.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, he should just focus on bringing back, welcome back, Cotter. Yo, let's move on.
Termination, boy, gone.
Yeah, take it over, good brother. I'm done.
All right, cool. That's what happened, everybody. While y'all were on the grind. All right, it's time to pass that rock. It's time for us to vent on anything that we want to vent on for the week. So I'm gonna bring the ball up this week, and I don't really have anything to vent on. You know. All I can say is my normal stuff. Everybody I argue with about sports all week, y'all stupid.
I'm going to
pass that rock to Kill and let him tell y'all why he mad.
Okay. Good evening, War Room family and galaxy. I just wanted to take some time to talk about the current NBA lockout we have before us. I decided to do a minuscule amount of quantitative research, and I found that 68 NBA players have already gone overseas to continue playing basketball this season. As we speak, there are 73 NBA players who are deciding whether or not they want to take the trip across the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean, and even passing by the Indian Ocean in some instances. After the latest deal was turned down by the NBA players, it looks like we are that much closer to replicating the 2004-2005 NHL hockey season that was canceled and never existed and will never ever exist again in the history of life or Earth, unless things start all over, of course. Now, Billy Hunter has been quoted as saying, "Maybe we can start our own league. We can't play at MSG, a.k.a. Madison Square Garden, but we can play at St. John's." Now, personally, I got hyped. I was like, oh, snap, the Washington Wizards can't play at the Verizon Center. They could play at Howard University. H-U-H-U, Bison. Now, from an analytical perspective, I do believe this lockout will help the current generation of NBA players. A best-selling author named Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote Outliers, The Tipping Point, What the Dog Saw, and Blink, is a favorite of myself and James the Blueprint Williams. By the way, you can download those audiobooks from our sponsor, Audible, for free by going to our website or at warroomsports.com. Now, back to my analytical point. Gladwell often writes about environmental or incremental changes or events that happen that affect a shift or a person or a size or a society or culture. In my estimation, this lockout will breed a generation of players who are more frugal with their income and not continue the cycle of retired NBA players who are filing for bankruptcy or on the verge of going broke after making seven figures and nine figures. Now, the current players are starting to see how it is when checks stop coming through and how they would have to live once their NBA checks stop. Well, it will take about 15 years for my theory to be proven true. So until then, I will throw a pass, bounce pass style, fundamentally to Brad, the hot block commander.
Hey, what's up, world? The hot block commander is on the road. I am live from the Steel City, and I want to give a shout out to a city and a city of fans that have a rich football tradition, and that's all I have for y'all today. So y'all get off easy. Let me throw this bounce pass to my man Blueprint. Let them people know something.
Thank you, good brother. Thank you, good brother. You know, like Doc Bay did some quantitative research. Well, I did some qualitative research by surveying me, myself, and I. And, you know, basically, I'll be very brief. What's up, people? This is War Room Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint. And like I said, I'll be brief. But I heard from a reliable source that the Philadelphia Eagles are giving Mike Kafka just as many reps with the first team as Vince Young, because apparently Vince Young is having trouble understanding the Eagles' playbook.
Dumb.
Let me say something to you, Vince. You are the one who started all this dream team nonsense. And now there may be an opportunity for you to play, and you're not prepared? Come on, fam. You are all that's wrong with quarterbacks in the league, specifically a certain shade. Anyway, being a great quarterback is more about what you do Monday through Saturday than what you do on Sunday. You have to focus on the process and not the end result, homie. It's a reason Aaron Rodgers looks like he's from another planet when I watch him play from week to week. You know why? Because I've never seen a picture of Aaron Rodgers in the club with his shirt off looking like a homeless John Amici. Honestly, I do hope you get it together. Because when people piss me off, I usually tell them to jump off a roof. But looking at your past, you may take me seriously. So I'll refrain from saying that. But seriously, though, I'm rooting for you to wake up. But as of right now, it looks like the day you wake up is the day that Urkel boinks Laura. Yo, I'm nuts. So, with that being said, I see my man PJ. PJ, you got something to say, good brother?
Yo, I got a little something to say, cuz. I'm going to keep it consistent with them good old Eagles that you already scratched the surface on. Mr. Mike Vick, I checked the terms of your contract. I was looking through it hard. Couldn't find any verbiage stating that you're contractually obligated to throw an egregious game-ending interception on all would-be game-ending winning drives. I couldn't find anything that stated that. I looked and I just couldn't see anything. I'll give it a second look. Moving on really quickly, Steve Smith. You, my friend, you're the lowest form of life. You are a parasitic, one-celled amoeba consisting of infectious protoplasm surrounded by a gelatin-based rotten mule mucus membrane. You deserve to be beaten, stomped, and castrated. And with that, I cut to the coop, still evil and upset about my Eagles, taking it out on all these buck-toothed dudes standing in front of me, thinking they're going to block my shot. I go up, have a little gas, so I fart. I come down on the left side of the court with two hands, bang it, get my pinky stuck in the hole on the rim where the net goes. I cut that a little bit, brought it down, got a little crooked nub, but I'm still very sharp, very nice like my man Blueprint, and I'm still chilling.
And the crowd goes crazy. Yo, why PJ got Ronnie Lotfinger?
Yo, Steve Smith is a dog, yo. I can't, yo. He's a dog.
The lowest form of life. The lowest form of life. That's all I got to say about him. And
will he redeem himself against his old team this weekend?
Well, the last time he played him, he was tossing balls up off his hands to the D-backs that were sticking him. So hopefully he don't repeat that, but... Anyway, let me let everybody know how they can get in touch with the War Room. You can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter.
Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, you can always email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports merchandise, and then click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair in Sports and War blog. It's heat up there, y'all. It's heat. Then you can click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, to subscribe to our iTunes podcast, to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple devices, and you can watch our YouTube videos at warroomsportstv.com. Right now, this is what you should do. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. While you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. So raise your hand, and we just might call on you.
Word up. All right. That's you, Jimmy.
Yeah,
anything
no doubt,
going on
I got
in the chat room?
The grocery line got me dying in there, yo. Talking about how Andres Nocioni missed out on a $525,000 check today. One check for that much? That's a nice shake right there, right? Anyway, let's talk about some combat sports, you know what I mean? Yo, the first thing I want to talk about is the fight. Pacquiao and Marquez. Now, Pacquiao defeated Marquez in a controversial decision. Now, I've talked to Dev since then, but let's start with our boxing expert, Paul Tyrone Johnson, because, you know, he's a boxing connoisseur. What did you think about the fight? Because none of us have heard from you yet.
Man, all I can say is this. If Floyd Mayweather is scared of that Manny Pacquiao, Manny Pacquiao... He's scared. He's a chump if he is. Because here's the thing. I'm just being funny. It's amazing. When I look at that fight, it speaks so strongly of where that cliche comes from, that styles make fights. Because that entire fight, it looked like Manny Pacquiao was just uncomfortable. It's just like he was, one, he was off balance. I actually saw, I think I counted two occasions where he left his feet and threw a punch with both hands at the same time. I think he really... and you know what? I kind of attribute that to a couple things. One, he was uncomfortable. Two, he's a fan of the War Room and heard Brad make a comparison to him and Bruce Lee, and he really trying to live out that Bruce Lee fantasy. I think that may be what he was doing. So I'm like, it just looked weird. But seriously, it just seemed like he was completely off the entire fight. And what he was looking to do, it looked like, was mix it up when he could. The worst part about it, which was the most egregious thing, is with I know, Dev, you mentioned, I think, the day after or the night of the fight, was that his manager told him, Marquez's manager told him, I don't know if it was in the 10th or the 9th, one of the later rounds, the latter quarter of the fight, I want to say.
A couple of them,
He said, I remember him saying it back to back in between rounds, and he told him that he was ahead and he was winning the fight. And I swear it looked like Marquez took his foot off the gas pedal after that, and he was kind of like cruising. And then Pacquiao was, you know, started to turn it up a little bit because it looked like Pacquiao the whole fight was looking to mix it up. He was uncomfortable with the way that Marquez was kind of being consistent, and I don't want to say boxing him, but to an extent, he was kind of like boxing him. You know,
yeah.
So
that's what I like. It's funny how people see different stuff when they watch boxing. I'm not talking about you and I, PJ. I'm talking about like a lot of people because it kind of depends on who people are rooting for. There was a lot of anti-Pac-Man sentiment. So there's a lot of people out there saying that it was like highway robbery. Now, I agree with Jimmy's term that the decision may have been controversial, but I think the fight was really, really close. And the fact that Nacho, why is his name Nacho? He kept telling dude that you're ahead in the fight. If this is a title bout and this dude is the champion, he's recognized, you know, by many as pound for pound number one, you're not getting his belt off some close decision. So never tell the dude that he's winning because he needs some incentive to just keep doing what he's doing. If he doesn't tell him that, I think he beats Pacquiao easily in this fight.
Because, yeah, like I mean, like you said, I don't think it was one-sided. It definitely wasn't one-sided, but I think Marquez would have won it.
I think he kept him under control. But like you said, every time Pacquiao got hit, he did try to, you know, he tried to hit back, like, when he got popped.
Right.
I watched the fight multiple times. Initially, I had it a draw, and like I was telling Debbie, I said, second time I watched it, I had Marquez winning by one round. I said, but it was that close, and even if it is that close where you win by one round, like, yo, you're fighting the champ. So you have to it's just like watching wrestling back in the day. You got to pin the champ. You can't win on a count out. Shout out to my opponent. But, yo, you have to beat,
bam, bam, bam.
You gotta beat the champ. You know what I mean? You got to beat
man.
The champ.
In order to beat him,
yeah, like yo, Ric Flair says, in order to beat a man, you gotta beat the man. Yo, Ric Flair, the greatest of all time. Anyway, it's funny because Styles do make fights and he has problems with counter punchers. But Dev, I agree completely with what you just said. You can tell who people are rooting for by the way they talk about the fight. Yo, there's some people that hate Floyd that think like, yo, the fight wasn't close. Pac-Man dominated. Sort of like
that's how it's going to be. If they fight and go to a decision, whoever you're rooting for, you're going to say this dude beat that dude up, and it's
That's why I have a total appreciation for the knockout artist, because there's no question.
I know, no
you
doubt.
You got knocked the F out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's what Pacquiao thought he was going into the fight trying to do, because the only reason he's fighting this man three times is because every time he beat this man, people say he didn't beat this man. If I'm him, like, stop fighting this dude, because, like what y'all were saying, you know, it's a matchup thing. You may be better than a whole lot of – you may be better than people that beat him or, you know, whatever, but he's a bad matchup for you. So, so they're talking about maybe a fourth fight, like, yo, stop playing.
Come on, cuz.
He's going to, like, I'm going to fight this dude until I knock him out. So they're going to have, like, eight fights. Pacquiao's going to win on a controversial decision each time.
It's crazy. How many ways can you get a cat?
Hey, here y'all go. Let me get this in real quick. We did our predictions. So I guess if I had some money and I put some on the line, I would have won some cake. But I had Pacquiao winning in the decision. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember that.
It definitely wasn't a dominant performance for Pacquiao by any stretch of the imagination. But I saw him winning by a minor margin.
You're a hater, though, so it don't count.
No, I'm not a hater. You can't say that because I've already admitted on the air that I think Floyd is the best fighter in the world. I just don't like him. See, that's what we pride ourselves on is objectivity.
I'm being smart.
I think Floyd would beat that particular Manny Pacquiao. Like, I'm not
– Yeah, he's going to have to come
back. I've seen Manny Pacquiao fight a lot. Yeah, exactly. And it almost looks like if that's his game plan against Floyd, I don't think it's going to work. I've seen him fight better fights, but again, it was a different competition. So I've definitely seen him fight better fights and look better, look sharper, look more into the fight. He just did not. It was just something about him.
Let me ask you a question: Is that due to Marquez's, his bout game? Mm-hmm. Like, does he make the man uncomfortable?
It's due to that matchup, man.
It's the matchup. I mean, it's him. It's the way he's boxing him. It's the way he was. I think he was just being consistent. He was jabbing a little bit. He was throwing. I can't remember if it was like, I don't know, if it was overhand, right? He was throwing something that was just not. It's not a typical just a jab, but he was throwing something consistently that seemed to continue to land. So I mean, it was Marquez. Don't get me wrong, Marquez deserves credit. Yeah, probably right. Yeah,
pipe.
Marquez deserves credit though. Yeah.
In our chat room, the homie Brandon from Brandon on Sports, he said that Marquez is too old. He had nothing left for the tank at 38. But he personally thought it was a draw. He said, basically what he said, to beat the champ, you have to KO him or beat him badly. So,
it has to be decisive, man. They're not taking belts for close joints unless your name Bernard Hopkins. You look like a catfish.
I want to see Nacho and Freddie Rumble. That's who I want. That's what I want to see. And I want to see him interview. I want to see him interview Freddie. Because Freddie's going to say, we are prepared to fight Floyd. We are prepared and we will win because he has the eye of the tiger.
Yo,
And stop.
Hold on.
Hold on.
You know he got the Michael J. Fox, though, right? You got the Ali.
Well, hold on. First off, here's the thing. I wonder if Freddie Roach did fight, though. You think he would, like, you know, do it like Pacquiao does and use drugs? Like, he'd get his Panama Lewis on, stick some drugs in his water or whatever? Anyway.
But no, we were talking about Nacho. Like, on the other hand, you know, Freddie Roach was over there telling Pacquiao that he needed to knock this dude out.
Yeah.
Now, we spoke.
That was telling
to me.
That was telling.
I don't think it was telling, though, like you do. I don't think that it means that he thought he was losing. I just think he was doing what Nacho should have been doing. Like, look, the fight is close. You got to get a knockout. You got to keep this dude motivated. Because, you know, if you go over there and you tell him anything but that, he takes his foot off the gas like Marquez did. And
I mean, I hear you.
That
could have been what it is, but I've never heard him say that in previous fights when it's coming down to the wire. To me, I guess from looking at one
Yeah, but how
to
many
other,
previous fights, how many people recently has he just not dominated, even if it's a decision?
I totally get what you're saying, but I'm just saying the way when you're watching a fight and they go from one corner to the other, it's like it's telling a story, even though, you know, that's not the case.
I think Freddie's just a better trainer, because dude name is Freddie.
I'd rather see
Freddie fight Floyd Sr. Because if y'all peeped that video that was on our blog this week, Floyd Sr. took out a little
pocket. Floyd Sr. would put Freddie out of his misery.
Yo, Floyd Sr. got a little dip. He got a little doubt game left. I'm like, okay, old head.
Well, then we have
another video on our blog.
Then
you want to talk about the
fight this week?
Yeah, absolutely. The MMA fighting. I was excited about this, being an MMA fan and watching on Fox, even though they got 8.8 million viewers, right? And that's huge. I mean, that's completely huge. I mean, they have more viewers than every, like, college football game this year, with the exception of the Alabama-LSU game. So they got good numbers, but the fight lasted 64 seconds.
And the champion lost.
The champion lost. It is a combat sport, and, you know, things do happen. So the question I have is that a success for MMA, or is that a fail? Because some people say, look, I'd rather watch a knockout than to watch a boring fight go to a decision. But 64 seconds, though?
Yeah, but this was kind of too quick. I'm not even talking about just time-wise. I'm just talking about the fact that they really didn't get into the action. He just caught him with something that he wasn't expecting, and then that was kind of all she wrote. So, you know, even if something's going to last for 64 seconds, if they're just going to come right out, start scrapping, you know, getting it in, and
I think it was done wrong. They should have had at least two fights because their strategy, they had a couple fights, but what they did is they put them on Facebook, and you actually went to their Facebook page, and you can watch them right from the page or whatever, some of the undercard bouts. But they only had the championship bout, you know, on Fox. Yeah. You know, the joint was over so fast. It's kind of crazy, though. It's kind of crazy when you watch it. Like, I've watched a lot of matches. And
Scream
the
room.
Fact that the fact that...
Yeah, it's funny. Like you said, Jim, I think that would help if it were to be if they had multiple fights on that card. I think those quick knockouts would be something that people like would want to see. Like, people love that. That's what people liked about Mike Tyson. I mean, they hated to pay to see him, but they knew the drop. Well, I wouldn't even say drama, but the action in a knockout is just like people are drawn to it. So maybe they had stacked the card a little better.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, like, combat sports. It's like you see hard, like, long fights and the decisions, and people are pissed. But then people get pissed when somebody gets knocked out fast. Like, you can't win. And, you know, Brandon, again, in our chat room, he says MMA knows their fights can end at any time. It should have been more fights on live TV. And that's exactly what I just said because that would have given you a better chance to, you know.
That should have been like a five-fight card or something like that.
Yeah. Now, see, the problem with that is they were trying to, you know, build off the fact that it was a big boxing match that night, so you could watch that first.
And sometimes they would have
put five fights on, they all would have went to decision.
Well, segueing from this, y'all know our big guest tonight is an MMA fighter who's going to fight this weekend in Washington, D.C. So let me first tell you guys that Kyle's appearance tonight is being sponsored by Audible. So let me do this quick audible blast before we bring him into the war room for the first time. You guys, is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done. So we're going to welcome our guest into the war room for the first time. Hopefully it'll be the first of many. Kyle Sefcik. Kyle, you on the line?
I'm on the line, man. What's up?
I'm good. How are you? This is Devin.
I'm great.
All right, what's up?
This is D. Austin.
Welcome to the war room.
Thank you for having me.
There's five of us, so you're at the round table with us tonight. So we're going to talk to you for a few minutes. We know you got some things to do tonight, so we'll get right into it. Basically, I mean, just tell our audience how you get started. How did you get started in MMA? Because, you know, it's a brutal sport. So I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there are wondering what kind of a dude you got to be to want to be an MMA fighter. So how'd you get started?
Well, personally, starting out, I had no intentions of ever becoming an MMA fighter, let alone even a fighter. I didn't even like to fight, you know what I mean? I guess you could say, you know, but 17 years old, so 7 years ago, I'm 24 now, getting out of high school, you know, trying to map out the rest of my life, decide I want to get, you know, maybe go into the police force, maybe do some college, go to the police force, maybe do some FBI, so... what I did was I decided to take this martial art called Krav Maga, K-R-A-V-M-A-G-A. And what it is, it stands for contact combat, and it's an Israeli source of self-defense. And what I wanted to do was just do this so I can learn some things, you know, that will help better my chances of getting into the police force, better my chances of handling the academies and stuff like that. So in no way did I ever want to become an MMA artist, but it eventually evolved into me being picking up these Krav Maga pretty fast, and eventually these schools wanted to sponsor me in Muay Thai and boxing and jiu-jitsu and basically took me under their wing from there. And since I was so young at the time, I mean, remember at the time, the MMA was not, it was just evolving. It wasn't like a young person's sport to get into and stuff. So they, 17, 18 years old, they were just, you know, sponsoring me and letting me train, you know, 4 hours a night in this and get lost in this art. And eventually come, you know, a few years ago, I had my first MMA fight, and before I knew it, I was pro.
Wow. Wow. That's okay. Crazy because, you know, I'm from Philly, and growing up, I fought a lot. But now I'm trying not to fight, so, you know, it takes...
I was a kid saying, oh, man, fighting's terrible. Even at 18, 19 years old when I was already in this stuff, I was watching MMA on TV, like, how can guys do this? This is terrible, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, Kyle, this is Akil. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
I appreciate it.
And I have a question for you, and you kind of answered it recently. But what are your fighting disciplines? I know you mentioned Krav Maga, but do you incorporate any other fighting disciplines?
Yeah, absolutely. My main disciplines now, you know, Krav Maga is basically what I started with, and I always have it in my roots. But my main disciplines now is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is, ground fighting. It's basically submissions, wrestling on the ground. You know, like I just said, it's wrestling with submissions. And my other form is, stand-up wise, is Muay Thai. I've had some boxing, been coaching boxing in the past, but Muay Thai deals, you know, with the knees and the kicks and the elbows more of a defined way to get things done fast. And so I'm very even in both aspects, stand-up and ground, and lucky to be like that.
So, Kyle, this is PJ. Quick question for you. What weight class do you fight in, I guess primarily?
Primarily is the weight class I fight in is 170 welterweight. I fought two title matches at 185. Nobody would take the fights against these guys. They were monsters, and, you know, I would be, you know, they'd call me 2 weeks, a week before the fight, and I'd say, sure, you know what I mean? But I fought at 185 before. Those are much bigger guys, definitely not my cup of tea, but 170 is my ideal weight class. That's what I compete in jiu-jitsu at, Muay Thai, and all the other MMA fights.
You sound like a thrill seeker, man.
That's really what it is. Kyle, what's going on? This is Jimmy. It's a pleasure to have you in the war room. I'm a huge MMA fan.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Yeah, I have a question for you, though. Speaking of that, you know, I watch a lot of fighters. I want to know, who have you trained with in terms of other MMA fighters or even other athletes?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first, I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard of, well, obviously you have, but the first person, the big name I ever got to train with was actually one of the people who started the UFC, and that's Royce Gracie. My first blue belt was given to me by Royce. Yeah, my blue belt was given to me personally by Royce Gracie. And then I've trained with guys like Boss Rutten, BJ Penn, Sean Sherk, Urijah Faber, Aaron Riley, Henzo Gracie, Pedro Sauer. So I've gotten a good, round, good feel of all types of people. I've never been stuck to a certain school, so I've always been able to get different people of all different kinds of instructors and fighters, and I'm very fortunate, you know.
Let me ask you a question. I don't know if you got his name. Who do you think is the toughest?
Who is the toughest? All right, I'll tell you the toughest. The craziest is Boss Rutten. Those of you who don't know Boss Rutten, he's a Dutch guy. He's bald and he's just ruthless. And actually, he's a black belt in Krav Maga, and he's just a crazy guy. Like, he's the kind of guy that you get hurt training with, whether you want to or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. He's even crazy on TV. The show he was hosting, the MMA show. He's like, something's wrong with him.
He's just one of those guys, man, just crazy. But he's definitely the craziest and most ruthless guy I've ever trained with. Everybody else seems to be pretty chill and, you know, but all good in their own ways.
And by the way, we have a question. I'm sorry, Brad, I'm going to cut you off. We have a question in the chat room for you. Do you have any family? Are you related to Kevin Sefcik? He played for the Phillies. From like 95 to 2000.
I've been asked that before, and no, we are not actually related. Maybe long roots we are, but definitely I've never been in contact now.
Got you. All right, go ahead, Austin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you just ran down a list of ass whooping, man. very impressive name.
I really do.
Yeah, so my question for you is, what other organized sports have kind of held your interest? Were you engaged in any other organized sports coming up? And what are some of your other interests as well, going beyond sports, if you could tell us a little bit?
Yeah, well, growing up, I actually played sports my whole life. You know, I got started at age 4 in baseball, and then all of a sudden football at 6 and 7, and basketball, and basically played football, basketball, and baseball, you know, religiously till, you know, all the way up to college. I actually played college baseball, but this was also the same time I got into mixed martial arts, and I was like, all right, this is the art for me. But I played sports my whole life. There was never a season I had off. Like, literally, there was never a season I had off, and I think sports actually played a big impact in the way I handled mixed martial arts and all the different things. You know, I took things from each sport and was able to convert it to MMA, you know?
Right. What skills would you say you've been able to transfer?
My striking, I'm very quick with my hands. Let's look at my right hand. You know, I played baseball my whole life, throwing the baseball. You know, you have to have good mechanics and stuff. Same thing came into step when, you know, I entered a ring. You know, I have to be able to, you know, strike fast, just like throwing a ball fast. Look at endurance-wise, you know, playing basketball, run up and down a court. Look at the contact in football, how to tackle. You know, it takes it. You know, that's kind of what you're doing sometimes when you're wrestling in the ring, you know?
Right.
Okay.
That's interesting. This is Devin again, Kyle. We hear that you're basically into a little bit of everything. You basically get your hustle on, you get your grind on, entertainment, training, opening the school. Tell us some of the other things that you have going on outside of the octagon.
Outside of the octagon, other than, you know, instructing and stuff, I actually own a company called KSF Entertainment. It deals with, you know, DJs and bands and stuff like that. We do all types of events, you know. Like last week I was DJing in D.C. at Ultra Bar, you know, one of the top clubs in D.C., doing stuff like that. Also putting on, like, charity events. We had 700 people at this basically charity rave we threw the other day, about last month, and we had 700 people show up, you know, stuff like that. So aside from that, I also am partners in this training company called Give Results Trainers. Now, with this, we do, like, personal training and boot camps, just fun stuff, you know, whether it's one-on-one training or, like I said, boot camps, all ages. So I stay active with that. But the most recent thing I'm excited about is we're going to be opening up a new school in Damascus. And what I mean by school, not like an education-wise school, MMA and sports school. It's going to be MMA-based, but also sport-based, you know, sport-specific. You know, if a kid wants to come in for football training lessons, you know, we have that. We have, we're going to have all the, you know, the arts, like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Krav Maga, boxing. We're going to have all that stuff at this school to offer, even Zumba. I'm sure you guys heard of Zumba for, you know, a lot of stuff that women are doing. We're going to have everything possible at the school. So if people come in, they say, instead of saying, why should I join, they say, why not? You know, why wouldn't I join? Right. So we're really excited about this. We're talking with two big buildings right now that are interested in taking us in. So once we decide, it's going to be good to go.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I mean, when you get everything started and up and running, just give us a call and we'll try to, you know, help you get that out to our fans. We have a lot of fans in the D.C., Maryland area. We're big in Philly. Oh,
absolutely.
So
absolutely. And you guys will be coming will be coming in, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I need to get back in shape. I'm sitting here behind this microphone for too long, so.
I worked out with an MMA fighter one time, and I think I stopped going to the gym after that because you guys don't play. You guys don't play no games when you're training. Y'all play no games.
It's basically what I love about this sport, MMA, is it really is both physically and mentally the best thing you could, like the hardest thing you have to push yourself to in both aspects. You can be in great shape, but you also have to be, you know, mentally prepared for everything at stake, you know what I mean? The training that goes into it, pushing it till, I mean, it's something that anybody can develop, but it really takes a lot, you know?
Yeah, even with, like, boxers, when you guys try to cut weight, that's, like, the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, actually, I'm cutting weight right now as we speak. My mouth's a little dry because I can't drink water.
I told you, you're going to have to teach me how to cut weight. I got a lot of weight to cut.
There's some good tricks. Now you'll be mad because you'll be smelling things better than usual. Like you'll smell McDonald's from like 2 miles away, you know?
You're hungry as hell.
like a grizzly bear.
But it's definitely all worth it in the end, you know?
Yeah, hey, can you guys imagine Kyle like DJing at a club in D.C. and, you know, something break out, get a little raunchy in there? You think he'd be able to
somebody
get out of line?
Somebody get out of line. You can check that. You haven't had that happen yet, have you?
Oh, it happened twice.
Oh, you had to step from behind the DJ table.
Well,
you had to show me a special set of skills.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not like I go out there and just start like, you know, wrecking people. It's more of like, you know, subdue, I guess you want to say, the situation, like with a rear naked choke and then hand it over.
Basically, just hem somebody up. Like, let's chill. Go ahead, PJ.
You can imagine me stage diving and just wrecking the people fighting or something.
Instead of beating somebody up, and knocking them out, you just like holding them like, look, man, just stop. Just stop.
Yeah. Just tell them, look, I got a special set of skills that bodily harm to you.
It's funny you mention that because one of our co-hosts, I'm not going to mention their name, but, you know, they got into a scrum at one time when we were all in college, and he was able to physically destroy certain athletic team single-handedly.
Right.
Y'all can compare notes off the air.
Special
set of skills. So you're like, listen, dude, don't cross that line. Cross that line.
Exactly. It's more about just, you know, calming people down more than anything. Why, you know, throw things and make things worse.
Right. But let's talk about Saturday's event, Kyle. We know that this is your pro debut, but what was your win-loss record as an amateur?
Well, it would be if you took all the matches. It would be 6-0. But the last fight I had, I fought in North Carolina in July, and it was supposed to be pro. You know, I showed up there. It was pro. I had all my stuff filled out. But in the end, after the fight, some things didn't go through, and like things weren't between me and my opponent. They weren't processed right as a pro. So we were ended up getting an amateur match marked down. So 6-1, I guess you can say, as amateur. So that's basically it. 6-1 amateur.
Okay, it's pretty good.
Okay.
Now, before I get my question, we have another question from our fans in the chat room. Tia Naomi, she wants to know, what do you physically and mentally do to prepare for fights? Because it's both a physical and a mental sport. So what kind of training do you have leading up to your fights? And also mentally, how do you prepare?
Oh, okay. Well, physically, obviously, it's the training. It's not just spending time on the mat, meaning it's not just I go in there and spar and grapple. It's also taking the time to train with, you know, like these other guys that I've known all around the DMV area that are, I want to say, you know, still better than me. They, you know, these are the older guys that have been around for years and years. And it's training technique with them, you know, not just always going hard. It's, you know, getting the mental reps, you want to say. So I do that. But aside from that, like, what people in the sport need to do is, because it can really stress you out, not just stress you out, but it can burn you out. So what I do is twice a week is I'm very, I love to rock climb. It just clears my mind. I go and it's still physical and it helps me in parts of my game. You know what I mean? And like on Monday nights, I'll go play basketball for cardio and just have a lot of fun for that hour and a half. So physically, I just switch up all kinds of things, you know what I mean, whether it's the track,
yeah,
basketball, MMA, boxing. It's just always staying busy in something but enjoying it, because the moment you stop enjoying it, you shouldn't be doing it. So that's physically. And mentally, I mean, that's the key aspect. It, like leading up to the fight, like, you know, there's so many nerves and so many feelings that add up. Like, you know, you're stressed, you're nervous, you're excited, but you don't let people down. You know, there's so much that goes into it. All you can really do is just take a deep breath and just understand at the end of the day, like what I tell myself is, hey, life's good. At the end of the day, no matter what, just go in there and do what you've trained. You know what I mean? You're capable of doing this, obviously. Go in there, do what you have to do, and win or lose, you come out and you go back to a great life. So mentally, that's how I, you know, prepare. And also, I'm a very strong Christian myself. So I'm very big, you know, into prayer and stuff like that. I know at the end of the day, God's got my back.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the mental part is more difficult than the physical part?
I really do, because I believe the physical part itself has to do with your mental process. So I think at the end of the day, you know, our minds is really what dictates everything. So physically, you know, when I'm dying and I can't go another second, it's my mind that says, hey, do this one more second. Do not give up right now. At the end of the day, it's going to be my mind over anything that wins this fight.
Okay. I don't have my own question for you, but our chat room has a lot of dialogue for you. They want to know the fight last week with the UFC. Did you watch it, and do you think that it was stopped earlier? What do you think about the overall fight?
I did not watch it, but I watched the recap. And from the get-go, even before the fight, even Dana White will admit to you guys, or will admit, and he did, it was that he was nervous about it because they had an hour-long block, I believe, on Fox, right?
Yeah.
He was nervous that they should have had more. First of all, the fight itself, they wanted it to go longer. They wanted it to be this big thing with, you know, Kane and him. He most likely should have won, blah, 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 blah. And I believe that in terms of business-wise, they should have had a lot more people on the card. In terms of the fight itself, I wasn't surprised. I mean, this is MMA is great. People are going to win. People are going to lose. At the end of the day, it's a fight. Anybody can get caught in anything, and that's honestly what's so great about the art itself. So
yeah.
I thought it was awesome. I love underdog. I mean, that's what I like to fight as. I love fighting as an underdog myself. So when underdog wins, I love it, I'm not surprised. It happened, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, now I can finally get to my question.
We got another one, Jim.
We got another one.
On
our chat room is loving you, huh?
This one is Facebook.
That's fine.
Kevin Lang on Facebook. He says, "When do you think that the disparity between boxing paydays and MMA paydays will be comparable?"
You know, that's a very good question, because people don't know this, or I guess people do, but boxing paydays are so much more than UFC fighters these days. Would you guys agree?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've had, like, how many years?
I'm just making sure we're on the same page. Now, I think, I mean, I've always been a fan of boxing, but I do love MMA more. And I think that boxing, you know, it really has, you know, started to take the back end of the MMA. You know, it's starting to get be in the shadows of MMA. The thing is, there's plenty of boxers in the world, but there's only, in my mind, there's only a couple key, you know, like the Pacquiao's and the Mayweather's that are able to really, you know, keep the boxing going, so their pitties are so much more because of that. They'll bring the people there. As far as the MMA, it's developing. People aren't just joining gyms for boxing right now. They're joining MMA gyms for everything. So, honestly, I see it. There's going to be a lot more MMA fighters, you know, especially in the amateur field, and it's going to keep going and going and build up for more and more pros. And I just don't see it happening in terms of unless it's the George St. Pierre's versus Anderson Silva's, you know, these big paydays paying off for you know, the next 5 years. But eventually, I think MMA will put boxing kind of in the back burner forever. I hate to say it, but that's when the big paydays will happen. That's when it's like the best two in the world in anything possible, and that's when the big money will come in. Right. Yeah, Kyle, I actually looked into this before and, like, did some research, and the biggest problem is the structure of the sports. Boxing has so many promoters, and they don't have a major entity, say, like a UFC, so to speak, to put on fights. So that's why it's always top-heavy in terms of the card. You'll get one great fight, and the bottom fights suck because the guys at the top are clogging up the money, and the promoters, you know, don't want to put their fighters on an undercard not making any money. So it's kind of the way the sports are structured as well.
You're absolutely right. At the end of the day, there's a lot of business involved in the back burners, you know?
Yeah, and you just brought up two names, and I still didn't get to my question yet.
No, you're good now. You take it.
I'm good now. You just brought up Anderson Silva and GSP. If they fought, who do you think will win? This is a question I didn't even have planned to ask you, but you brought it up.
Honestly, if I had to pick somebody to win, it would be George St. Pierre. If you were to ask me all about all types of fighters, you might know more than I would. I'm more of, you know, into the training and stuff. I watch some. I know who the big guys are, but I don't know all these fighters. I don't really care. And, I mean, I'm not going to be mean. I'm just saying I really don't care.
Because you're a fighter.
There's people I respect, and, like, George St. Pierre would be one of them. He's actually on the top of my list to, you know, go train with, and I eventually will. But he's not just good physically and mentally in the sport of MMA. He's a good person as well. I'm a big fan of that. So I think that in the long run would take him farther than, you know, the Anderson Silva, who recently, you know, this past year got in trouble for certain things he said and done, you know, just being cocky and rude and stuff for the sport. So I would definitely go with George St. Pierre in that fight.
Okay, good. All right, now back to the question. Getting back to your fight. What do you know about your opponent that you are fighting Saturday night? I believe his name is Mario Martinez, correct?
Yes, his name is Mario Martinez. He's out of California. He's a military guy, so all I have is respect for him. I mean, anybody who serves in the military, it's definitely awesome. And you know that, you know, these military, especially from clips I've seen of him, you know, we study each other, you know, study film and stuff. So I've watched some stuff on him, and he's a fighter. You know, he goes till the end. He won't give up. So I know that he is not just, you know, in our country, but he doesn't give up, and he works hard, he trains hard. So I know that about him. I know he's very strong with his hands. Like, he's very talented with his hands. His last fight, he got a knockout. He is undefeated. He's never lost. So I love that aspect of it. He hasn't tasted loss yet. I'm sure he doesn't want to, so I know he'll go as hard as he can. So But what I'm happy about is this guy's going to be kind of the same. In my last two fights, I fought up guys that were weighing 20 pounds heavier than me at fight night. He'll be the same weight as me, so I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. Okay.
Hey, Kyle, this is Akil again. Who's promoting Saturday's event?
The promotions are going to be going through One World MMA. They're putting on the big event. It's called One World MMA, and they have their own website, oneworldmma.com, and they put on a lot of pro venues and bring it a lot more to the East Coast. They're actually going to be doing one that they invited to me already to compete in next year in Brazil. So they're spanning out, so you'll hear a lot from them. They do have, you know, links to the UFC and stuff like that. I mean, pro is pro at the end of the day. You know, I could be fighting, you know, George St. Pierre in 2012 if things happen, you know what I mean? So But One World MMA, and they do great, and I'm looking forward to they put on a great show. You know, not just putting on great people on the card, but also people come, people fill seats. They have a great show there, sound, everything you possibly think of.
Cool. Okra. Yeah, we enjoyed you. We got to get all our guests out of here on a question or two. So I want to know, and the fans want to know, what is your favorite sport outside of your own, and who do you root for on Monday night, Sunday, Saturdays? Who are your squads?
All right. So my favorite sport, that's a good question. If you asked me a few years ago, I would have said football and the Redskins. But lately, that's just because, I love up in contact, and I was grown in the Redskins, liking the Redskins. But now I would have to say it would be hockey. I mean, I love the fact that it's always fast play. It's great contact, great speed, like I said, and the fact that they can, fight in it is awesome. They can put their glove down. They can say, all right, man to man on the ice right now, let's go. And then you know what? At the end, they both go to the penalty box, and the show goes on. It's not like they're fined or anything like that. But I would have to definitely go with the Capitals. That's really they're a good team, that's what I have to go with: hockey and Capitals right now.
Okay, a man after my own heart, a hometowner.
Yeah, all right, well, everybody out there, if you want to see Kyle fight this Saturday, if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, he'll be fighting One World MMA Presents the D.C. Pro Fights. It's Saturday, November 19th. The fights start around 6:30. It's the D.C. Convention Center. If you don't know where that is, that's 801 Mount Vernon Place, Northwest Washington, D.C. Come on out. Go to the One World MMA website and get the ticket information. Kyle, we will be in the – about two of us will be there, but we'll have about four or five people with us rooting you on. We hear that, your section is trying to get a whiteout going, so we'll have our white shirts on, and we'll be there rooting for you, man.
I appreciate it, man. I promise you this. Ooh. I'll fight my heart out. I'll fight to the very end and leave all the training in there, and I will represent us very well on this East Coast and the DMV area.
Okay.
Mario, Kyle is coming to knock you out.
Uh-oh. Who said
all right,
that?
So
said
we'll see you on Saturday, and it was great to have you on. We hope to have
you
back.
Thanks, Kyle. Well, I appreciate it, guys. It was a lot of fun.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
See
you.
Oh, that was a really good interview, man. I'm about to, Jimmy,
Jimmy's
been trying to get me deep into MMA for a while now. I think after we go to this event on Saturday, I don't know.
Yeah, he might get things blocked, knocked off. Then might come back a fan.
Hopefully it's Mario Martinez. I mean,
absolutely.
The country, I'm happy for that, but he's not our fighter at the moment, so.
Not at all.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So, let's
all right, let's
I hope Kyle Lewis. I hope Kyle lays the smackest down.
No doubt. Dad, you want to jump right into these hot topics, good brother?
Yeah, everybody know how to get in touch with us, so you can jump into
some
hot
topics.
Yeah,
let's jump into some hot topics. And by the way, these hot topics are brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry or Palm phones. And if you do have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, go to your roof and jump off. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Click on the Stitcher logo on our website and listen or download to your mobile phone directly from that page. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. I like saying, get my old school radio voice on. Anyway, the first thing I want to talk about is this Monday night wager with the homie Ranked Top 5, who is in our chat room. For those who don't know, he's from Chicago, the city of Chicago, and we had a bet based upon the Eagles and Bears playing on Monday night, and the Eagles sold the farm. So we had to, we had to pay up. We had to send him a care package from Philadelphia. And if you want to see what that care package consisted of, you can go to our Facebook page or go right to warroomsports.com/blog. We put the pictures up. Send them a couple
couple cheesesteaks, you know, some tasty cakes, you know, what we do in Philly.
Yeah, the easiest thing, easiest way to see it right now, because Jimmy put it up, yeah, just go to our website, warroomsports.com, and then click on the blog tab on the upper right part of the page, and you'll see the grub we had to send out to our Chicago radio brethren, Eagles. Like
yeah,
Jimmy
man.
Said, they
you
stole
know,
the farm on us again.
I ain't going to front, though, yo. Ever since we lost that bet, yo, I'm, like, rooting against the Bears every game. Like, I've never really cared about the Bears, but I'm still pissed about losing that bet, so I'm, like, going extra hard against the Bears.
Because you wanted some pizza. He wanted that pizza.
Yo, my whole question is,
Jeff
and they know too. They know. Why didn't Jay Cutler really show up? Why was he that Jay on that day?
I don't even think it was that. The Eagles didn't touch him. I think everybody, including the people on our chat room right now, they all have got a sack on Jay Cutler this year. All the guests,
yeah.
The grocery line, they got a couple
Except
sacks.
Eagles,
I got a couple sacks. Naomi in the chat room got a couple sacks. It's like, yo, but when the Eagles played, they just, you know, they didn't get any sacks. And, you know, anyway, I don't even want to keep talking about the game. Have you want to
man,
tell
Jeff,
them what was in the actual care package we sent?
Yeah, we sent a care package. It included two cheesesteaks with fried onions, you know, and they can dress it the way they want when they eat them. It had two tasty cakes. I think it was a coffee cake and like a chocolate cupcake with the vanilla icing on the top. Two Philadelphia soft pretzels, a couple of peanut chews. Y'all know peanut chews from Philly. And two bags of Hers potato chips. If you're in our chat room right now, and if I left something out, rank top five, they're in the chat room right now. So I'm pretty sure they'll tell you everything that's in there, because he's talking about how
yeah.
good the tasty cake is right now. He's rubbing it in a little bit. A
couple Philadelphia soft pretzels, man.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, screw the Bears and screw the Eagles for making us lose for that, you know. At any rate, yo, let's talk about this NBA lockout. You know, what are your thoughts on what's going on with the lockout?
It's been gotten crazy. For everybody who don't know out there, the Players Union declined the latest offer by the NBA ownership, and now they're decertifying. So basically, now it's going to the courts. So they've canceled games now throughout December 15th, but I think that's like wishful thinking, because once the courts get involved, the process kind of slows down a little bit. So it's really wishful thinking to just have canceled the games for December 15th. If we have basketball at all this year, it's not coming until after January. Maybe All-Star.
I'm just getting pissed personally, because I just want to see. I want to see some games. Instead, I cut on TV and I got to watch Amari get out the car with the tight clothes on and Melo with the colorful scarf and all that. I want to see these dudes play ball, man. Kobe with
all
the fancy boy clothes on. I ain't trying to watch that.
My best recommendation is just.
I got an analogy that I would like to share, and it may fly over some people's heads, it may not. When you was a little kid, and we as the fans can say that we are the little kids in this, and you have mom and dad arguing, what mom and dad have to do is stop arguing, especially in front of the kids, and make everything all right. Somebody got to step up. Now, let's call the owner's dad. And let's call the player's mom. Dad ain't going back down. So, mom, you got to do the right thing, man, here. And just because you – and at the end of the day, the players themselves, what's the one thing that players always say? I'm a fan of the game, too. I'm a fan as well. And you came from being a fan. I think there's culpability on both sides. So the owners are just as wrong. But somebody's got to give us basketball, man. I don't care about all that. I want to see ball.
Yeah, I do too, Austin, but it's funny. I did some digging. I was telling Dev Rowe, I did some digging. I was looking at things, and it looks like the players were ready to make a deal. The owners don't want to budge on one iota. I'm talking about anything. And it's a situation where it looks like the owners were negotiating in bad faith the entire time. David Stern made a comment once they decided to break the union. He says, like, about time. Like they should have done this earlier. So what that means is, if you believe they should have done this earlier, then the whole time you were negotiating, you had no plans on, you know, negotiating in good faith. You were negotiating in bad faith the entire time. So at this point, the way I look at it is it's more on the owners and not from a financial standpoint. Like, you know, I'm not saying
so
the players
are what's in bad faith? Like, what were they doing
the day,
that was in bad faith?
They had no plans on, like, you know, signing a deal. The analogy was made. I read a good article about this in terms of the NFL deal and how, you know, you're asking the players to give back money. Okay, so we'll give you back money, but we want this. It's like the NFL. The players lost in terms of the financial side, but they got things such as no two-a-days and a couple other concessions that were made by the owners. The owners of the NBA aren't negotiating. They're like, look, this is what you're getting. I'm not giving you anything in terms of outside of the financial realm. I'm not giving you anything at all.
Right.
They had no plan. They had no plans on ever to go. They wanted it to go this way, which is why they filed suit first in New York, because the New York courts will favor the owners. So they never had any intention of negotiating a contract in good faith.
I mean, this is according to who, though?
Where this is coming from is, I mean, I have a lot of different sources. One was Sports Illustrated, and one was ESPN in terms of what has came down in terms of what the players have asked for and what the owners tried to give back. They said basically there was a $100 million difference. The players wanted to give back 80, but, you know, with the 80 being given back, they wanted a couple other things. They wanted to make sure they can have guaranteed contracts still and the veteran wages to be, you know, locked in. Owner says, we're not giving you anything. Basically, the owner is saying, look, take it. If you're not going to take this, then,
well,
you know, it is what it is.
Have we heard this from the owner's representation or from...
Well, actually, Billy Hunter
did
say this. When Billy Hunter made the statement that they were breaking up the union, he did say some of these things. If you listen to his entire statement he made when he said this, and, you know, David Stern came back and blamed him for the whole ordeal.
That's what I'm saying, but that's one of those things where both sides are going to be throwing jabs. I don't know who to believe and what.
But what about David Stern coming out saying, look, either take this or that's it? Like, you know, although they didn't take it. I mean,
he did say that publicly.
If you're negotiating, you don't say that publicly. What is that? If we're in negotiations, like, you don't do that.
Well, that's when negotiations get to a point where you've already missed several weeks of the season, so you're basically fed up with negotiations. I mean, and when you start to say something like that, you basically know that the other side doesn't have as much leverage as you, and it's probably a thing like, okay, I didn't want to have to say this publicly, but now, you know, this is taking too long. Take this deal or else. And the players' union basically called their bluff. Jimmy and I were talking about the other day, there was a little, I wouldn't call it a rift within the players' union, but there were certain people who were saying that they don't think that their player rep was giving them all of the information that they needed. And one person who was kind of outspoken, not in an angry way, but Steve Blake, before the last proposal came down, he was just trying to tell the union, why don't we take a league-wide vote on this? Because a lot of guys aren't getting the information, and you guys are just, you know, making decisions and declining proposals without really checking with everybody. There may be a lot of players right now that's just ready to say, look, I got to take this. And that may be the case because a lot of the player reps are trying to throw it back on the player, saying, you know, we're trying to keep in touch with these guys, but some of these guys, we call their homes or their cell phones and their lines are disconnected. And I'm thinking, like, damn, like, people got money problems like that? They can't keep their cell phone on? They're millionaires.
Yeah, but I mean, time is hard.
The only thing I can recommend is for everybody to locate the best hometown college basketball team and root for the home team.
I know.
Right? Only like we're going to see the NBA.
My whole thing in this is looking at and examining the ownership in basketball, and really you can take almost any sport and really understanding those that own it. Yeah, you have exceptions like Michael Jordan, and he's an exception. But generally speaking, these are people who have always been of privilege and have always had millions, if not billions, of dollars. So I don't understand or relate as a common fan or the common man. I don't relate to where they're coming from anyway. So my assumption is you definitely don't have my best interests at heart as ownership anything that you do is based on tweaking things to affect the bottom line and get you better margins. So I can't relate to you. Your ownership, if you're the devil, you're the devil because that's who you are, and I accept that. I understand that. The players, with the exception of maybe Kobe Bryant, all come from where I come from. True, that may be Kobe had a couple dollars. Kobe had a couple dollars from Jump Street, but and maybe there are exceptions to this rule. But generally speaking, a lot of these kids have come from being just your average, regular Joe person. You just happen to have a talent to play ball, but you come from my neighborhood, or you've come from my courts, and you're a fan of the game, and now you're in a position where you're able to play and engage in the game that you love, that children play for free, and you're getting hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to do so. So when I look at, as a common fan, the only two parties in this that can change this are the owners and the players. Yeah, the players may be getting the short end of the stick, but in my mind, as a common man, I'm looking at it like, okay, so what they're saying is, okay, instead of you making $1 million, you got to make $800,000. Well, I start to think $800,000 is still more than I'm making 10 years of my life.
But you can't think about it that way. I mean, I don't think you should be able to think about it that way, regardless of where you come from. You know what,
Jimmy? I can't relate. I cannot relate to the owner. I can't relate to ownership. I can't relate to them. I can relate to the players. And that's what even the league sells. That's what the owners sell me. I relate to the players.
No, I get that. But you know what?
Jimmy, real quick. I was going to say, except for Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban's probably the only owner who puts the fan first because he was a fan and he wasn't filthy rich. That's why he loses about $10 million a year because he keeps the ticket prices very low and he overplays his players. So he's probably the only
exception
to the rule.
And he's the only exception to the rule.
But here's my point, Brad. When you say things like that, you know what you sound like? It was like I was watching that the Kurt Flood documentary. And people were saying the same thing about him. Like, he was making – they offered him $100,000 at a time when the average person made $10,000 to $15,000. And, you know, he wanted to become a free agent. And the same argument was made. He's getting paid to play a child sport, so he should be happy making $100,000 when the average man's making $15,000. But at some point, it's like, when do you stop taking that? They say they go from $1 million to $800,000. Next time they come back, they're not going to say, let's go back to $1 million. They're going to take you from $800,000 to $600,000, from $600,000 to $400,000. You know what I mean? Like,
huh? No, there's going to be a law. The law of diminishing returns is going to come into point.
These guys are greedy capitalists. They're going to keep taking as much as they can. They're going to pillage.
Sure.
They're not going to come. If they're negotiating, use your numbers, take the million to 800,000. They're never going to go back to $1 million. They're going to keep going down.
They're going to have to go back to a million at one point because, you know, the market is going to cost
inflation
that.
And the market is going to do that. And these are the same owners, Jimmy, that gave these guys 57% of BRI. So it's not like they weren't eating sweet. When you compare revenue sharing across the board in other sports, basketball leads the way. They've had it sweet for a long time. I've talked to NFL players who are like, they look at basketball players not even in terms of salary, because obviously the differences in the sport dictate your contract, but just the revenue sharing, like, dang, these dudes got
it. I was talking to people this week who was using that slavery analogy again.
No, I'm not going as far as slavery.
No, not you. I'm just saying, I was talking to people who were using that analogy. That analogy bothers me to my core, for real.
I know that bothers, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm just saying in terms of, they have that, and now they want to pay Darko Milicic $20 million, so now they want you to now they want to come back and say, okay, we gave Gilbert a bean, we gave him $20 million. This is their system. Remember, this is not a strike. This is a lockout.
Remember, that's been my sentiment the whole time. Like, I do think that there are a lot of, like, marginal players in the NBA who are highly overpaid. That's why I think even when they go down, I don't think the best players in the league are really going to be affected by this. But guys who shouldn't be making some of the money that they're making won't be doing that anymore, and they probably get shorter contracts. I mean, Darius Miles made $9 million last year. Who in here didn't think Darius Miles was dead? Where did he play last year?
I thought he was playing in movies, but he was like still on an SAT test or something.
Exactly. That's why I just think there's something they should be able to do about things like that. You know, if you're losing money, but I've always maintained, like, I think that it should be more of a 50-50 deal, but it's difficult for you to come down off of 57% and expect the players to bail you out of mistakes that you made as a business.
Absolutely.
So I'm kind of like in the middle. Like, I, you know, as a business person, yeah, it should be lower. And as a fan, because the product isn't worth, you know, it's hard sometimes to see.
Absolutely.
You know,
but
like,
Austin, the same way you said you can relate to the players, I can't relate to somebody making millions to play a game. So I can't relate to either one of them. But just looking at it and being objective.
But Jimmy, all of these players, with the exception of very few, come from regular situations. They come from normal human beings that weren't making millions of dollars. You and I don't know any owners of any pro sports teams.
Unless they went to Duke. But listen though, I just feel like, you know, these guys
Grant
made a lot of
another
mistakes.
Exception. and for me, this is me taking the fan perspective. I'm not even looking at this from a business. From a business perspective, I would tell the players to get all they can get. Stand up for what you want to stand up for. And even from an ownership perspective, we've already acknowledged, hey, Michael Jordan may be a sellout for many, many reasons, but he's not a sellout for looking out for the interests of his squad.
Can I read something real quick since you brought that up?
Is he looking out for the interest of his squad? Or he looking out for the interest of his piggy bank because he got robbed when he bought the team?
he saw him coming. Hey, let me read something real quick, Austin, since you brought that up. Because, you know, I wrote a blog this week about Michael Jordan and being a sellout because Jason Whitlock wrote one last week saying that he was selling the players out because of his stance. So I wrote a blog kind of defending Mike, you know, not because he's Mike like a lot of other people do. They just defend him because he's Mike. I was just defending him from a business perspective, and somebody wrote a comment after my blog, and I didn't ask his permission if I could use his name, so I won't use his name. But his answer to my blog was he's an owner, and he's acting like an owner. The players don't deserve any profits. They're employees, period. If they want to share in the profits, they should take the losses as well. Let them go a season at a loss. All teams aren't profitable. If they want to live like owners and let their teammates' salaries be an expense, if they want to live like owners, then let their teammates' salaries be an expense they must bear. Let's see who they consider the enemy then. The players didn't take any business risk to join the team. The owner's the only person who deserves the profits. Just like employees can't claim profits of the companies they work for, players shouldn't either. The only sensible remedy is to make the team a publicly traded stock company. Then all of the shareholders would get dividends. But then again, since fans are more numerous than players, their fates as players, employees, would be in the hands of emotional fans who might call for a player to be traded or eliminated. He said eliminated.
I mean, that's somewhat true, but then when you start looking at owners who come into town looking for tax credits to help build arenas and buy teams, then it's a joke because now you're not taking all the risk. We as taxpayers pretty much, you know, are taking some of the risk when we pay to have arenas built. So, I mean, I get his point, but that's not 100% true.
Okay, but you said you as taxpayers. He wasn't talking about us. He was talking about the players.
I get that, but to say that the owner is taking all the risk, I mean, you know, they're in a partnership, whether you want to look at it or not.
He's comparing them to the players, though, Jim. Even the analogy that you – even the example you just used, you brought us into it. You brought the taxpayers into it. Okay, so maybe we should have something to say about this. But what risk does the player – what business risk does a player take? You're coming from Puerto Rico within the stroke
the
of a pinch stroke.
They're independent contractors. They're not an employee. Like, they don't have a typical W-4 employee relationship. They're independent contractors, which means as an independent contractor, you want to get as much as you can. They're doing what they're doing. But I'm just going to his point, though, Jim.
What independent contractor takes a part of
the problem? That's semantics. An independent contractor is an employee with an employment contract.
What I'm saying is he doesn't get
part of the profits he gets.
If he negotiates that, he can. But that's what they're negotiating, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're doing what they should do as independent contractors. You can negotiate to get part of the profits. They don't have a typical employee relationship. They don't have a typical employee relationship. I've been an independent contractor of an insurance company where I negotiated to get part profit. So, I mean, it can be done. I mean, it's possible to be done.
But I understand that. But his point, which was a good one, okay, if they want to take from the profits, if you want to be equal with the owner and you want to take from the profits, then why don't they take from the losses? That means the
because they don't have
these,
to. That's part
the
of
small
being an
market.
Independent contractor.
Hey, but
you don't have to.
At the same time, that's where they get off easy. That's the thing. That's his point
but that's because
the
that's
owner
because
taking
they
the risk.
Have the talent.
Because
they
while they're getting their paycheck
revenue.
Regardless, the owners are losing money unless you're, you know, Jerry Buss.
But, listen,
like
they generate the revenue. They have the talent which people come to see. So part of the talent is you leverage this to make part of the profits without taking the risk. I mean, that's how the business is structured. This is what it is. I mean, that's part of being an independent contractor. The business owner, he puts up the money, and you make him revenue. That's what it is. Did you see the other response you got? It was pretty much taking the other side. Did you read that one?
Where?
I have it here. I'll read it.
It's on Facebook.
It was on our blog. I'll read it. I'm not going to say his name again because, like you said, we don't have his rights. But here, his was his point. He says you make valid points on a number of levels. However, you neglect one important one. An owner's priority is to research his demographics before his investment. Jordan's eagerness to join the BBC, the Billionaire Boys Club, was quite simply a bad investment. He has no history of running anything successful to legitimately take that risk. He didn't brand himself. Phil Knight recognized his earning potential and gave him a 10% slice of a $200 billion product. Jordans weren't Jordans. They were Air Force Ones made famous by the Georgetown Hoyas. When the red and black version took off, they were branded as Jordans. And Jordan cannot receive credit for branding either. Magic Johnson preceded him by 14 years with everything from 7-Up to Converse. Bo Jackson's Nike commercials were Nike's most successful to date.
Wait a minute. I don't mean to cut you off, but what that have to do with my blog?
It sounds to me like you're saying Jordan took the risk when he – basically, it sounds like Jordan got robbed when he bought the team, more or less. So his priority is to research.
But that's not the point. I think the points are getting. No one said that he
didn't
get robbed.
What
now
is dude
he's
talking
robbed.
About? I didn't defend any of the stuff that he. So I mean, you sure he wasn't answering somebody else who wrote on the blog? Because I didn't say.
Talking specifically about Mike in terms of Mike being an owner and asking for what he's asking. Because remember what Mike said to A. Poland when he was a player. He said if you want to take money back, I understand that. But listen, these are points that I've made myself.
I just don't understand what, because you said he was taking the opposite. That wasn't the opposite of what I was writing. I was just, my basic premise was
he's not a sellout because he's not a player anymore, so he can't take. He went in on Jordan in terms of personal things, but I'm talking about in terms
that's
of
what
the owner.
Sounded like. I didn't defend Michael Jordan
and
all
read,
that.
I'm not gonna read the whole thing because it's kind of long. But what he was saying is the owners have responsibilities in terms of research demographics and do their due diligence before their investment. So the point he was making, if you read the whole thing, is when they don't do their job, they're actually coming back to the players looking for money. So, you know. And also, Michael
that's
Smith
one
in our
example.
Chat room.
There. That's one example. There's been the other people who's leading that are the people in Portland. They've had that franchise for years. Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, now anybody who can go to my blog right now, I say in the blog, I wish this wasn't about Michael Jordan, because I don't want to look like I'm defending him, and that makes people go off on tangents like that I wasn't even talking about. All I'm saying is he's not a sellout because he's no longer a player, so he can't go into the meetings being the face of the players. That was my whole point. He just went off on the I don't like Michael Jordan tangent, and that had nothing to do with me.
Yeah. Jimmy, real quick, because, listen, we've made the point here that Bob Johnson saw a fool coming and robbed Mike, which I agree with. I agree with that, but that's one of those situations where – You're pointing and making fun of the person for getting in the boat, and the boat is taking on water. That doesn't mean he should stop shoveling water out of the boat to save it from sinking. He still has to try and right the ship.
No. Who said that, though? If you listen, like, even with the show last week, I said that Mike's not a sellout. Mike's acting as if he's an owner. I actually think it's deeper than that. I think that Michael Jordan has an issue. You know, Michael Jordan wants to win at all costs at everything. So yeah, I think that I think that Mike is being Mike. That's exactly my point. I think Mike is just being Mike. I have no problem with him. But I was just trying to get to his points, but it is kind of long, and we have more to get into. His points about the owners and the mistakes they made.
He made no point about sellout thing. That's what the blog was about.
No. It definitely not. But what I was talking
was
about
on
is
I don't like Mike stuff. I can agree with everything you just read that he said, but that's not what
I was
talking about.
I was talking about in terms of what we were talking about in terms of the owners versus the players, management versus
right.
the players. That's what I was talking about. He responded to your Jordan blog with it, but he made points about owners versus players in there. That's
think about
it.
How many new owners are in this position? So it's not really a good example to use for the whole because he specifically talked about Michael Jordan, and I've said myself, Bob Johnson saw him coming when he sold him that team.
Yeah.
And I said in the blog, Charlotte was a city who already lost an NBA franchise because they weren't a good
money. If you listen to what David Stern said, he said there were about 10 owners who, were vehemently against, offering them anything. They didn't want to give him 50. Jordan was in that mix. He said Dan Gilbert, like you said, Paul Allen. And it was a couple other owners who made the point that they didn't want to give him anything. And they were complaining about the big market.
I just had an epiphany, and my point in all of this is, yeah, there's culpability on both sides of the tracks, but the owners are going to be filthy wealthy beyond imagination whether basketball goes away or not. So they can afford to play the ego game and play the who's jumping is longer. No, but you know what, though? Even though we laugh about Mike and he's nowhere near some of these guys, basketball goes away, Mike is cool. He's got a $600 million net worth. Come on, let's not even fuck with him.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Mike's brand and everything is attached to basketball.
I get you.
And now
this can go away. But listen,
let me make my point.
If this goes away, if ball goes away, which there is that possibility, and fans throw their hands up, the players suffer. The owners are still billionaires. They just lost their toy.
I mean, somewhat. All of them aren't in that position, Austin. All of them aren't.
Other than Mike, let's take Mike out of the picture and look at the other 31 teams. Is there an owner in that group? In that group that won't be wealthy if basketball goes away?
I mean, I don't have the list in front of me to break down, but I know for a fact that some of these guys have notes and obligations which are based upon basketball being played.
But having notes and obligations doesn't mean that you're wealthy. George Soros probably has notes out there, but he's still going to be worth billions if it goes away. I mean, I'm using him as an example to say that because you have debt doesn't mean that you're not wealthy beyond imagination. So in saying that, I guess my point being, if this goes away, the owners are still wealthy men. The players are out of their means to make money in this country anyway, and the fans lose NBA basketball.
All right, look, before we give
not
a quick congrats to Coach K. I know we can all agree on this one thing. We want basketball. And what's irking me is all the people out there who keep saying, well, I don't care. I don't need – well, speak for your damn self. We basketball fans. Yeah. We want to watch some basketball. You don't represent the whole of the world, the whole of the nation at least. But it's a lot of people that say that to me on an everyday basis. I don't really care. I don't care if they don't ever come back. I'm like, okay. But – I need basketball, so I hope they get all of this done, even if the court has to force their hand. Really, I don't know if the court gets involved. I don't know who's going to be happy in the end. Because
nobody.
I don't know. It might not be a nobody. I just have a feeling that the court would probably lean towards more of what the owners are talking about. So I don't know if disbanding is the greatest thing. They might.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. It depends upon where the jurisdiction is given, which is why the owners did it initially. They were shopping. Yeah. They were shopping, already trying to figure out where to put it at to get the benefit to them. But I mean, at the end of the day, if the courts get involved, it's going to get ugly. We knew it was going to get ugly coming into this thing. So
yeah. So let's talk about your man, and then give our predictions for the game tonight.
All right, Coach K is overrated. Y'all can finish. Herb McGee got more wins. Go ahead, though.
I don't know. Congrats to Coach K. He got his 903rd victory. Put some number one all-time in Division I wins. So, Jimmy, you think he's overrated, you say? Because just want to know where everybody thinks he falls as far as rank goes.
He's probably behind like John Chaney, Herb McGee, Speedy Morris. I don't see my common theme going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And my man Shaka Smart. No, seriously though, he's one of the top coaches of all time. I'm just being smart. No pun intended.
He did it in what, 8 less years than Bob Knight? Was it like 8 or how many?
Yeah.
I forgot how many years he did it in versus Bob Knight.
Somebody
pointed
out to me the other day, PJ, that, you know, it used to be a school would probably get like 30 games in, but now with all the tournaments and all that kind of stuff, you might get like 40 games in. But I saw somebody else counter, you know, all of these conversations happen on our Facebook page, and somebody made a counterpoint to that saying, well, you know, it really doesn't matter how many games there are because, first of all, you have to be a great coach to be able to coach this long anyway. So it's not like,
he's
just accumulating. You have to be a great coach to be able to accumulate.
If John wouldn't play 40 a year, they wasn't going to fire him either. So, like, you know what I mean? So I get what he's saying.
But fire
John
him for what? Have you ever seen Coach K give Duke a reason to fire him? So that would.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I understand the point that you have to be great to coach that long. But a lot of great coaches coach their, you know, coach long, such as a John Wooden, but didn't have an opportunity to play that many games. Who would have stuck around the same way Coach K stuck around? But I don't
look at the number when I rank Mike Krzyzewski anyway. I just keep it at Coach K. His name is crazy. I don't really care about the number. I think dude is a really good coach. You know what I'm saying? Duke has always done well. Recently, it's been a little bit different, but you know he has to go out and get the best players that are also good students, and I think it's hard to do that year after year in the kind of college basketball climate that we have now. Yeah. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna say my opinion. You know, I try. I pride myself on trying to be objective, and so I offer the disclaimer up front that I hate Duke and I hate Coach K, but I have a respect. I definitely respect Coach K and his talent and what he's done, and I think that he would, you know, rather have my respect than my love anyway, Pulse. The 903 is very impressive. I think you have to give him top 10 of all time. I mean, I don't know that I would rank him above his mentor, Bob Knight, yet, but I think he's a hell of a coach. He's a hell of a coach. He's a hell of a recruiter. And so, you know, that what can you say but that? You know, I don't like him. I root for Duke to lose every time I see them play.
Okay, well, put it like this. We don't want to rank them. Plus, you know, we're not that old, so a lot of the guys who would be at this table were before our time, so we'll just do it like that. Like, who sits at the table of, you know, great
Wooden.
All-time coaches?
Wooden, definitely.
Who?
Wooden is there. John Chaney.
I mean, what?
You said Wooden? Gruden. I was about to say, no Gruden. Whoa.
No, new.
Wooden, yeah.
All right,
yeah,
are
Wooden
you seriously
is
putting
name
John Chaney
Wooden
there, or is this a Philly bias thing? I'm talking about the five or six all-time greatest college coaches. I know we all have an affinity for John Chaney.
Well, first off,
Dan,
I just found out Coach K is from Chi-Town, so he ain't in my table.
I would, you know, you have to put Wooden,
Shaka Smart,
Adolph Rupp.
Come on, man, one liner.
I think Coach K has to go there. Who else?
About Jay. Did you put? I'm just.
Oh, Bobby Knight, of course.
Mr. Mark.
What about Dean Smith?
Dean Smith. Bobby Knight, Dean Smith, Coach K, Rupp, Wooden. That might be the list right there.
There's
a lot of people who scream for Calhoun to get on this list because he has three chips with a, you know, a smaller program than the rest of these guys.
Yeah, and yo, also, the homie from Michigan State under the radar is nice.
Izzo's definitely one of the greatest of this generation. And he may be a championship or two from sitting at that table.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to give you mine, and it's not in any particular order. I would say Wooden,
Better not say John Chamberlain.
Coach K, Dean Smith.
John Thompson.
Bob. Bob Knight. I'm going to surprise y'all. I'm going to say Tarkanian.
What? Let's talk about the football, man.
I thought you pride yourself on being objective,
well,
man.
I know.
The
rough,
greatest leader. He's the greatest leader of all time.
He's
not even the greatest dude with a towel.
The war room are going to disassociate themselves from these comments.
Bob Knight. Good man, Tark was nice.
Yeah, but he ain't sitting at that table nice. Tark had a couple of nice teams.
Tark's not even in the same venue, man.
Yo, Tark ain't
I got John Chaney. I got John Chaney over Tark. I got
Tark selling DVDs, man.
I got Coach Ellerbury from Gratz over Tark. Come on, man.
Yo, I got Brent Rebel high school.
Badges like the running Rebels.
Man. Come on, man.
Calhoun and Izzo are definitely at the table.
You got the extra.
Your table big as hell.
He put an extra chair.
His table good. He got a stadium. Brad got
no,
ain't
no
at
table,
stadium.
Man. It's like a school bus. All right,
rough,
man. We got 10 minutes to talk about this game tonight, man. Brad, you messed up the conversation with Tark, man. We got.
Jesus, Tark.
And he threw out the disclaimer like, "I'm gonna surprise y'all." Hell yeah, you are.
Go ahead, man.
You ruined a whole
running Rebels
show with
Diesel
that one, man.
2 years.
Damn. Yo, man.
Hey,
Stacey
Ogman, Anderson Hunt. Stay fresh, Stacey Ogman.
I'm taking
Stay
Jay
fresh.
Wright over Tark Kanian, man. What about my man? What about my man Speedy Moore? Remember Speedy Moore?
Yeah. All right, so we got the Monday night scene going, but we got y'all crazy, man. We got some Thursday night football tonight. We got the New York Football Jets versus Jimmy's Denver Broncos. So you know the big story of this game, of course, is Tebow time. So 3-1 is a starter. Everybody out there, you know, still afraid to accept Tebow as your savior?
Yeah, you might as well just fall down and accept Tebow as your savior because, you know.
He's on money.
Let's go here.
Do all things
for
Tebow.
Who has the quarterback advantage tonight? The Broncos with Tebow or the Jets with Mark Sanchez?
I think Tebow, Let me tell you why. Because
okay,
they're not going to throw the ball.
What's the over under?
And Mark Sanchez is going to throw the ball, so therefore they got their advantage because they're not going to throw.
Let me tell y'all something about y'all homie Mars Sanchez. Listen, dude is overrated.
He's
Who rates Mark Sanchez as being good? You may be talking about his draft position, but I haven't heard anybody outside of Jets fans that even says he's okay.
What ends up happening is because the Jets are in the limelight, be it because of their defense or their play or because of Rex Ryan's mouth, they get enough limelight and attention.
But I think he's the Jerry Tartini in the football.
No, I think they do hype him up a little bit. They put it like this, like Dez said. Now I don't even hear people saying that he's okay. But I think they were like throwing around that moniker of the Sanchez, and they were saying the fact that he'd been to those AFC Championship games, and we all know that he really wasn't that good. But I think they wanted him to be better. I don't know that they rated him that high, but I feel like they were trying to push him up there a little bit.
Did they add him to the first round draft pick?
Yeah,
because he's playing.
But I mean,
this year, I think he just came.
Yeah.
He has regressed. His skill level may be higher.
Or never got up there.
I wouldn't call it regression. He hasn't improved as in his third year. Like, he's not that much better than he was as a rookie, if he's even better.
He hasn't improved since 11th grade. Since the 11th grade, he hasn't improved.
Yo!
Yo. But anyway. My man, yo, Tebow, yo, it's funny. Like, I don't even know what to feel about this dude, because I look at these signs. Yo, it's just so amazing how he got so polarizing. Like, you look in the game, they had signs that said, "In Tebow we trust." Like, he was Jesus.
Man, PJ,
had a face,
PJ,
his
yo,
face with
man,
the hair. I said, yo,
Tebow,
I saw the email you sent,
Tebow,
yes, yo, no, cuz, no. They really called this dude God. I'm like, yo, I don't understand. It's just amazing. I don't even know where it's coming from. I just like seeing him play. My man got the slowest wind-up I ever seen, but somehow he wins games.
Let me tell you his greatest move. I'm going to tell you how they're going to win tonight. If you see my man drop back and do the Tebow spin with nobody around where he takes his eye, kind of like what my son Jonathan would do at 3 years old, they're going to win the game, yo, with the Tebow spin. That's his signature move.
All jokes aside, right there, man.
He's a winner. Yo, he's a winner. He is the worst. As a quarterback, I've never seen anything uglier than what he does out there. Yo.
At the NFL
like
level,
somebody on our Facebook page, I forgot who it was, and I apologize for not giving you the credit, but they was like, yo, Tebow plays like he got a leather helmet on, yo. He played old school football, man. Tebow is pre-forward pass football, man.
What? Yo, pre-forward pass. Yo, what was that movie that George Clooney was in?
Hold on, you're not talking about the song from I don't remember, but yo, the point is this:
I know you're talking
it's just amazing. He had I think the over under on completions for him is like 5 tonight on completions.
Yo.
In Vegas, like it's just amazing that they're winning with that.
It's amazing that y'all are
winning with that style. My thing is this. At the end of the day, you got to win. I mean, he winning.
I got a question for the fans. I got a question, and I want y'all to answer it on Twitter, on Facebook. Listen, he's terrible. He's the worst thing we've seen at the position, but he has more wins than Cam Newton. How is that possible?
Yo. By the way, the movie was called Leatherhead.
Leatherhead, yeah. You know why? Because the NFL has gotten tape on Cam Newton, and they don't have enough. They can't believe. They look at the tape of Tebow and can't believe it, so they turn the tape off.
There is
no tape. He ain't going to beat us. And the next thing you know, he done won. They don't even look at it. They don't entertain the tape.
How do you defend for 1932 football?
The Broncos are trying to run that spread that they ran in college, but they don't run it like to throw the ball at all. And John Fox even made some comments earlier this week saying if we had to run a conventional offense, then Tebow would be screwed. This is coming from
the president of his team, his own coach don't want him to succeed.
Oh, they're trying to
set
him up.
Yo, there's people that hate his guts. Yo, but for some reason,
set him up for
failure. Listen, man, y'all might as well accept Tebow as y'all's favorite, man.
Yo, he still walk out there chanting the Lord's Prayer, and they accept him and bow down to him. And they have his face on their – they have his face on their Bibles. That's all I know. And I say, yo, this is amazing.
All thanks to Tebow, man. All right,
so real quick, because it's time to go, predictions for the game tonight. I got the Jets pulling it out because I think the Jets will probably be in more of a desperation mold. Than the Broncos. So I'll give it to the Jets tonight.
Yo, I got the Broncos winning 13-10. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the Jets got screwed by the league. How do you play on Sunday night, the game at 1 o'clock, then they put you right back to play Thursday?
Yeah, that's very
short. The Jets are the best defense that Tebow's faced, right, so far? Because he played,
He
played the Raiders, Miami, and Kansas City, right?
That 90-second mark just hit.
Yeah.
No.
With the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain.
Yo, man. Anyway, yo, thanks for joining us in the world this season.
And y'all know my pick.
Special shout out to the homie, Stop Austin, for joining us to talk about his upcoming MMA match in DC on Saturday. The War Room will be in the building and in your corner, Kyle. So shout out to you. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to the greatest sports show ever produced as we do our second annual Thanksgiving episode. We'll be providing your sports fix for you and yours on Turkey Day. Have a great weekend, and until next week, everybody, you know where to find us.
Boom. Taking it from the top. Chippy, it's all my people.
Sing it, daddy.
Hey. Be right. Take my mind where it's never gone before. Roll like a mushroom and cow shit. And I'm taking it just to get the ultimate high, baby. The ultimate high. Excuse me as I kiss the sky. Fingers on the sixpence, a pocket full of rye. Who the fuck on the dive for they culture? Talk the dead body like a vulture. The galleon, blacker than your blackest stallion. Hit your housing projects, I represent your Shaolin, my nigga. Hell yes, the apocalypse now, the gunpowder be going down. Diggy, diggy, down, diggy, down.
While the planets and the stars and the moons collapse, when I raise my trigger finger, all y'all niggas hit the deck. Cause ain't no need for that. Hustlers and hardcore, roar to the floor, roar like reservoir doors. The green eye bandit can't stand it. With more fruity and loose than that you can't stand, bitch. Plus, the Barbazi got me wild.
Fucking with us.
It's a straight suicide.
987654 3-2 murder, one lyric at your door. Take out, bring it to that ass roar. Breaking all the rules like glass jaws. Nigga, you got to get mine to get yours. Fucker, we don't need no rap tour. I'd rather kick the facts and catch you with the rap chore. More than you bargain for. The cows, I stays open like an all-night store. We're rare, like you should ill, like a piece of blue steel. Pointed at your temper with the intent to kill. And then your existence. M.E.T. Ain't no use for resistance. H.O.D.
I beat the ultimate rush to any nigga on dust. The Egyptian must used to have me poor mass nuts. I shift like a clutch with the ruck. Examine my nuts. I don't stop till I get enough. Your shit broke down like your flare. Since the dark side tears you into Hollywood Square. 6 million ways to die, so I chose. Made it 6 million and one with your eyes closed. And blindfold cold so you can feel the wrath. And shatter the glass in second half on your funky ass. And you're my man.
Cow.
Hit me now. Bitches used to play me, now they can't forget me now. They get me now, I rock the spot, check clock. Empty offer, licking off in hip hop. Fuck the billboard, I'm a bullet on my block. How you know when you pay for your billboard spot?
Look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane.
In the funk doctor spot, smoking Buddha on the train.
How high?
So how did I get kissed this guy?
How sick?
Sick that you can suck my tail. Look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane.
Recognize Johnny Blaze, ain't a damn thing changed.
How high?
So how did I get kissed this guy?
How sick?
So sick that you can suck my dick. Till my man Raider Ruckus come home. It ain't really on to the ruckus. Get home, puff a meth bone. Now we're off to the red zone. We don't need your dirt, we got our fucking own. Check it, I ring havoc with my hectic. Bring the pain, lyrics screaming for the antiseptic. Moving on your left, kid, and the method. Out my fucking dome, peace. Plus I got no love for the beast. Hailing from the big east coast, where niggas pack toast. Home of the drug kingpin and cut
from. Hey boy, you the rude boy on the block. You tried to stop the bum rush, you will get popped.
So run them out with a racist. My style was born in the busy staircases. Dig it, F a rap critic. He talk about it while I live it. If Fred got the blunt, I'm the second one to hit it.
Look up in the, I got the verb nouns and glocks in ya. Enter the center, lyrics bang like Ricker. Shay Rabbit, I bring habit with an AK-matic. Rolling blunts and all day habit. I get it on like Smith and West. Who clicks the best? Folks take a sip and test. Who splits your best? The folk phenomenon. I'm bombing you like Lebanon. Blow canals at Panama, just all stamina. Styles not to be fucked with or played with. Fuck them pretty hoes, I love those Section 8 bit. Just hitting snitches, twisting wigs with that radical mathematical type script. Just, I dig up in your planet's like digger. Boo, scared you, blew you to smithereens. Fuck the Marines, I got machines that like to spit and read Mad Magazine. I play more heads than Continental. Wreck your 5 times like US Air off an instrumental. Look, I'm not a halfway crook with bad looks, but I make murder your case like your name is Cal Brook. I break them off proper. Ask Biggie Smalls who shot ya. Fuck doctor with the 12-gauge Mossberg. Look, I got the tools like Vickle to make your mind tickle.
Yo,
for the 9 nickel.
Yo, Brad,
punk-ass pussy
lock.
Ass.
You ain't got to say no more, man. That's
word
shit,
up,
man.
Chill. We out.
It's over.